Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, friends. I'm Eric Olson. It is time once again for America's Most Haunted Radio. And with me, as always, is the haunted housewife, Teresa Argy. How you doing, Teresa?
I'm doing good, Eric. How are you?
I am very well because we are making progress. We're finally into something of a groove. It's hard when there's all these pressures and all the stuff we got to do, but we are making headway now on the book, the America's Most Haunted book, and I am excited about that. I have a way off in the distance. I can see the completed book out ahead. It's a ways off, but I at least can envision it now. So that's very exciting. And speaking of exciting, our guest this evening is the eminent paranormal researcher and world-renowned demonologist, John Zaffis. And I believe John just joined us. Are you there, John?
I'm here, buddy. How you doing?
Excellent. I just got through re-watching last week's episode of Haunted Collector. Excellent as always. And I'll tell you what, I like this season best of all. I think you guys are finding all kinds of interesting things, and it's a really good combination of interesting and exciting investigation backed with history. And I think the team works really well together, and I'm very, very excited to see it going that well. Plus, we know Brian. We're friends with Brian. We had
cool.
him on the show several months back, and Teresa's known him actually quite a while, haven't you, Teresa? Teresa, say hi to John.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me on.
Honor to talk to you. It's been a long time coming. And yeah, Brian is a bud, and he's been nice enough to do the show and stay in contact with me. And we have some mutual friends, and that'll happen in this business, though. People start to know each other.
Oh, yes.
So
I'm really interested that since I came from the pretty much the outside, basically just was a writer, kind of became interested in the topic, was watching the different TV shows, and you start getting more and more into it, and then I started interviewing people, and, you know, once you start talking to people and hearing their opinions and their lives and how they came to literally, many of them, dedicate their lives to the pursuit of the paranormal and trying to figure all this stuff out as well as help people, I've just been really, really drawn into it and just feel it compelling me. But I'm realizing now that it really is a relatively small world. There aren't that many people who are really, really deeply involved in it, especially people who've been at it for quite a while. And who's been at it longer than you? My goodness, 40-some or almost 40 years. That is amazing. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it? I mean, anyone who knows you, and of course so many do, know basically the tale, but we have to assume a lot of people don't. Take us back to the beginning and how you got into all this, and I think a lot of people don't realize the whole demonology side of it. I just knew you from Haunted Collector until I started doing the research.
Oh, yeah. No, back when I was 16, I had an experience at the foot of my bed. It was a Wednesday night. I grew up in the 70s. And I had school the next day, so, I wasn't out partying. So I knew I wasn't, hallucinating or anything, and saw this shadow figure standing at the foot of the bed, and it was transparent. It shook its head back and forth, and it was very tall. So I went downstairs, and I was telling my mom about it, and she goes, "Did it say or do anything?" So I said, "Just stood there and shook its head." And that's she had said to me at that point. She goes, "So that was my father." And I'm like, "Well, how do you know it was your father?" And she said, "He was a very stern man, never said much, but he would always shake his head back and forth." So at that point, that's when I started really thinking about things and, like, you know, just like these things do occur, these things do happen. And you got to remember, I grew up in the paranormal realm. I was always exposed to hearing about the ghost stories, wasn't involved with cases at that point, but always would hear about it from my Uncle Ed Warren when he would always come over and visit and stuff because his mom lived with us. So as time went on, you know, back then we didn't have computers or anything. I'd grab as many books as I could, then started going to haunted locations and eventually started working with Ed and Lorraine, worked with them for quite a few years, and eventually went off on my own, and here I am today. being involved with a lot of these different things and trying to understand it. And, you know, several years ago, I wanted to know about demonology. And that's another whole realm within the paranormal field, very controversial.
Sure.
I wanted to know, do people get possessed? Never seen anybody's head spin around. I still haven't. But I wanted to know if all these things would happen. And I was very fortunate because the Warrens were very well connected. They've worked with all different types of spiritual people and clergy and got to meet a lot of those people. And when I started realizing that each and every different, you know, religion and spiritual people out there got involved with deliverances and clearances and these different things, it made me really take that step back and go, all these people can't be making all this up. So then I really started studying it and had opportunities to work with some of the famous people that were involved with doing exorcisms and deliverances and things like that. And some of the things I've seen, some of the things I witnessed scared the living hell out of me. But it still made me take that look at the big picture and say there's so much that we don't understand. And it's always been such a secretive world that's what made me, you know, get into it, to try to comprehend it and understand some of these things that we can't explain. And to this day, there's still so much that occurs. There's so much that happens that I just can stand there and I'll just take a look at a scenario and go, okay, it's going like this, it's going like that. And people say, well, how do you know that? I go, trust me, it's just the way it goes. I can't prove it or disprove it, but I'm telling you right now, this is the way it's going to unfold and the way it's going to end up happening. And a lot of times it does. And here I am going into 41 years later, still chasing these things.
Well, I was going to bring that up. I'm glad you did. It seems like on the show, you really do have an instinct and a sense of where things are heading, a hunch, I've heard you say a few times, that probably is just, you know, born out of the fact that you just have such vast experience. When you've participated in hundreds or thousands of these operations and seen how they go, I'm sure you do start to see patterns.
Which is cool, you know, and I can use that experience to help. Now, going into the third season with filming and everything, this has helped tremendously with people doing research and people trying to figure things out and everything. You know, we'll sit, we'll talk and go over things, and as we're filming and we're getting into it, there's been times we've had to do a 360-degree turn because I go, no, it's not going this way. It's not happening. This is what's occurring. And people listen, you know, and that's a key factor with a lot of this, when they will listen and they'll take the step back and just go, he knows what he's talking about. And I go, yeah, think, you know. So it was a very interesting third round of episodes to film, to be more in the background with them, trying to understand things from the paranormal perspective, how I operate, what I do, and don't ask questions, just watch what I do, and it'll end up ending with a result of something, whether it's haunted, it's not haunted, it's a haunted item, it's the person, the house. You know, these are the ways you have to go about it when you're doing it. And like I said, you know, it was a lot of fun, I can honestly say, filming some of the episodes we did this round.
Well, it looks like it, and the team gets along well, and how fun is it, how exciting it must be, gratifying to work with your kids.
Listen, it's not gratifying working with your kids. No, it, you know, the key thing with all that is the fact that, you know, when we originally got involved, and, you know, Chris has poked around with the paranormal. He has gone on cases. He's done things. Amy has done research on things prior, and she would just say, hey, Dad, look at this, what I found out about this. But when we got involved and I got them too involved with the show, it was a very scary thing because not only am I going forth as far as a paranormal investigator, I'm bringing my two kids and getting them involved with it. You know, I'm used to the bumps in the road, but they weren't. And, you know, again, it's a double whammy, because when somebody criticizes or people write the cruel things that they do out there, that's very hard because I'm their parent.
Yeah.
So,
sure.
You know, I take a strong stance, and Dad wants to just, you know, go off the Richter scale and everything. But you know what? They handle it better than I do. So,
well,
you know, I just sit
back
and laugh.
They've grown up with it, I suppose. And they've seen how you have taken it. And that just means you're a good dad. You know, parents are protective. I'll tell you, we know Teresa's very protective, aren't you, dear?
Oh, a little bit. Just slightly.
Well, I mean, that's the way parents are. And you're always going to have a thinner skin regarding your kids than regarding yourself. Because like you say, you've been through it. Plus, you're confident. You know, you're a guy who's been doing it all this time. You've had success. You're very, very highly respected. And so, you know where you stand. Whereas with the kids being younger and newer to the game, you know, it's not something that's as well established with them. You brought something up, and I wanted to ask, just insert a quick question here. Do you recall a specific incident or time or investigation all along this path back to the beginning when it did occur to you that, hey, I kind of do have a sense now of what this is all about or how this goes? And I probably understand at least maybe the parameters, you know, of how all this works. Is that something you recall? Was there a time when you took a step back and said, you know, I think I really do kind of have a sense for this now?
No, I still don't look at it that way. I view each and every situation differently. I can reflect upon, I'll say sometimes, geez, you know, this reminds me of this case, or gee, that reminds me of that case. But I don't know. I don't ever think I have ever taken that point where I just took that step back and said, boom, 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 you know, that's the way it is. I still don't do that, because things can change. New information can come to the forefront. I mean, I still look at it from that perspective. I have to go in there to try to find out what's happening. I mean, you know, like I said, there's times where I could say no, looking at the scenario or looking at a situation, I could see where there's things that I refer to as repeatability with hauntings. I mean, it's ghost hunting 101 a lot of times when you're dealing with this stuff. So, again, you know, a lot of the key characteristics a lot of times will be there. I'm not a very big person that can toot his own horn. I'm just not that type of character.
Oh, I just meant more at some point, and obviously you're not. And it's also clear, I don't know if I've said it, I think it comes through really well, and part of what works so well about the show is that you really do have so much compassion for these people. You know, some of the shows, a lot of the shows, maybe most of the shows, the people, the investigators are talented and they're into it and they're good. And I'm sure many of them are at least on some level are genuinely concerned about the people involved. But, you know, a lot of times it just seems like it's a very kind of analytical thing. And it's something that they are doing. Whereas with you, it's always very clear that your primary goal is to help that person or those people or that family, and that's on the forefront of your mind. And I think that comes through as very genuine. And I think that's a really key part of it. And I'm sure that's part of why you have been so successful, because that is your priority.
And even doing the TV show, that's still remains my priority. When we're out there filming and we're doing the different things, you know, it just doesn't stop once, you know, we're at the end of it. There's been several cases where, you know, I've been on the phone with the people afterwards, or, you know, gosh, I'm not around anymore. Who do I know in the area that I can call to jump in and please go over and try and help them out? That, to me, is what it is, whether we're dealing with something on a psychological level or you know, paranormal. Again, to me, it's most important to try everything that I can to get help. and to do what I can with them, especially if there's children involved. And that's when you'll see me really take a stance when we're dealing with younger children. And, you know, today it's very fashionable for people to be entertained by the paranormal in their homes. And it's a very dangerous thing when you have small children in the house. So, you know, that's a lot of times where you'll see me take a stance with individuals and tell them, no, you have to be careful. You got to be extremely careful when there's children involved. So, but no, the being involved in, you know, tying into it. I mean, we did one episode. It hasn't aired yet. And I think it was probably the most traumatic filming I've done out of 60 shoots. I mean, there were just points in time where I just had to make them just shut down filming because I would start crying. My daughter would start crying. Our client was crying. All of us were just...
There was a lot of crying.
You know, and at the end of the episode, we were going through different things. And this is no exaggeration. I watched an entire production team break down and cry.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
I mean, it was just, I stood there. And you won't see it in the show, unfortunately, because it won't go to that degree. But I just stopped, and I turned and looked at all the cameras, and I just said, please stop. Everything just shut right down. It was like you would have thought somebody died in the room. But again, it's to me, it's important because a lot of times with emotion and connecting, it does help in a paranormal situation when you could bring some of those things out to the forefront. So again, that's an important element, I feel, within our field.
Interesting. Teresa, your turn. I have monopolized.
All right. I have a few questions about what you do on the show and what you do outside the show. I, unlike Eric, I've been in the paranormal basically all my life, so I was very knowledgeable of you and of the Warrens and everything before it became fashionable to enjoy the paranormal. So I thought it was great. I thought I actually couldn't believe that you didn't have a show up until recently because you've been out there for so long. You're like the godfather of the paranormal. And I followed your work and for years and years. What is the difference between some of the cases that you've done in your past that have not been on the show and maybe not once necessarily collecting the objects? And I understand the whole concept of the show is to, you know, find the haunted item if there is one and remove it. But, and you've been doing that for a long time, and we'll talk about the museum in a minute. But being the demonologist, what is the difference between when you go into a case where there's obviously something more than just a haunted item or a haunted house or a haunted person, something that you would consider that it's necessary for a demonologist, not a ghost hunter, to be involved? And how do those cases differ, the two types?
Thank you. I love that question. I love it. When we deal with this, and naturally, like you just said, for a haunted collector, that's about haunted items.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, all these cases are screened and, you know, they're all gone through before we even go to them. So I already basically have an idea of what we will be dealing with. But when I'm doing my regular investigations, which I still do, I continue to do them today, and we do deal with the heavier aspect of the work, and that's the demonology end of it, it's handled totally differently. I'm very guarded, cautious. I have to watch how we're involved with that, whom is involved with it, and whether or not we're going to be bringing clergy in, getting them involved. So it's handled totally differently than I would say I would handle a human spirit case or a haunted collector case.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, as we know, with the demonology, it's controversial. I have been approached in the past about doing a show on demonology, several shows on demonology, and I always said, you know, it's just going to get crazy, and you know, people are just going to rip it apart. Little did I know what people would do to haunted items. So, but anyhow, you know, that's just as bad as demonology, I think. But you know, it's handled a lot differently, and I approach it differently. I don't know if that's helping for you to understand what I mean by that. I think I'm relaying it.
Yeah, I was just basically the point I was trying to make, and you made it, is that there is a difference between the two types of case. I think one of the problems we have in the paranormal with the, because there's so many expert ghost hunters out there now because they've watched the shows and they've bought a couple pieces of equipment and now they think they're experts. They go into these things thinking they know everything, and not nobody knows everything, but thinking that they have the tools to handle these cases and that things are going to play out like they do on TV. And I think it's dangerous, first of all. I think that they're going in unarmed, thinking that they know what they're doing, and they basically don't. I don't think people read enough. I don't think they get all their research from television instead of books. But I think that on the flip side of that coin, they're the first ones to say, this is a demon case. There's a demon. There's a demon in this home. And
don't you love it? Don't you love it?
Yeah, but where were all these demons 10 years ago? All these demons.
I want to know, too.
They just suddenly came out, and then I keep thinking about if my father, God rest his soul, was a ghost in a house and somebody didn't know him, they would think he was a demon because that was his personality. He was a little bit – he's kind of crabby, you know, he wasn't a pleasant person to be around all the time. And I hear about all these demonic cases. And in all my years of investigating, and I've been doing this 30 years, I've come across maybe two. And two is kind of pushing it. One, I'm pretty sure, was something demonic. And the other one, maybe, possibly. And I've done hundreds of investigations. Hundreds. Now, I'm not, you know, so I just think that people are jumping to the conclusion that it's a demon without really knowing what it is and what demonology is. And so maybe you could clarify to you what constitutes a demon case or a case that is demonic as opposed to just a regular haunting.
Well, I think there's something wrong with anybody that does not have demons coming up through their floorboards. No, you know, I'm just joking because the same thing on my end. I have never seen so many demon cases in the 40 years I've been involved with this work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the key factor that I find, and I don't know why in our field, you know, back when I started, I was reading books. I was talking to people.
Mm-hmm.
The key factor was, I remember, you always turned to people that were in a field, no matter what it was, to learn from them,
mm-hmm.
to gain some of that knowledge that you couldn't learn in a book. Today, we don't have that anymore.
Like an apprenticeship type thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's just not there. And it scares the hell out of me,
mm-hmm.
because I'm watching. You know, again, so many of us that have been in the field, I'm not saying, you know, other people shouldn't be doing it or getting involved with it, but my God, at least learn what you got to do when you're going in and you're dealing with a residential home, a mom and dad and children. You walk in that home and you start screaming there's a demon in the house. Do you know the psychological impact that has on a family?
Especially the children, absolutely.
Yeah, it's horrifying me.
Religious implications.
Yeah, I mean, it's to a point where people have to understand that, you know, when you go in to investigate, you're there to check it out, see what's happening. I don't ever remember a situation where I did an investigation and all of a sudden I had all those answers. Mm-hmm. I can't remember that. And I can't see it happening now, but again, you have to evaluate before you come to a conclusion. Are we dealing with a nasty human spirit, or are we dealing with something on a demonic level?
Mm-hmm.
Again, with human spirit, if a person was a mean, abusive, nasty person in life, they're going to be like that as a ghost.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean we're dealing with a demon. We have negative energy, positive energy. So I look at all these things when getting involved in a case. And again, getting in there, jumping in, and people start screaming, there's a demon in there, you know, let's get clergy in here, let's start doing exorcisms. A lot of times that makes the situation even worse than it was.
Absolutely. And you probably have clergy that you work with from the different faiths. I have found it very difficult to have the clergy, at least in that I know, especially the Catholic Church, anyone in Catholic Church, to even acknowledge the paranormal, let alone help out. I think I've two priests that I've ever worked with that I've ever been able to be real open with about the paranormal and possible haunting. So
mm-hmm.
It's a little discouraging, but my network isn't nearly as wide as yours either.
Well, again, you know, some of it is a very difficult thing. I'm Roman Catholic, and I work with a lot of priests. And again, there are a lot of priests out there that, you know, are familiar with the work, especially today, I think more than ever in the past. But again, a lot of them are looking at it and they're trying to educate themselves on the fact of that. But a lot of priests are petrified to even get involved with this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the other thing, people feel that if they have something going on, and I get this continuously from people, John, give me a name of a priest in my location to come in. I want an exorcism done. Well, it doesn't happen that way.
Yeah.
You know, there isn't 911, the exorcist, that you could dial. So, you know, you have criteria that has to be followed. And it's not just priests, but a lot of clergy. They want, you know, evaluations done, psychological evaluations. They want to know about you. They want to know what's happening. You know, there's so much they need before they're just going to jump in there and start doing exorcisms.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite a process, and it is something that, you know, I do get discouraged, too, when we deal with the Roman Catholic Church. The other key thing, too, is, and a lot of people don't understand the fact that once a priest gets involved with an investigation, one of the best things a researcher could do is to back right off of the case. Why? You got to let that priest go in there and do his job.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you know, like I said, there's many of them I work with. You know, once I talk to Father, I make the contacts are made. I back off if somebody needs me from the family or Father wants to talk to me. That's a different story. But me being there, wanting to film everything 24/7, no, because that's not going to help the family.
How many exorcisms have you witnessed in your career?
Oh, gosh.
A lot.
Yeah,
well, I know your website says nearly 100.
Yeah, wow. That hasn't been updated in a long time.
Wow.
There's, you know, if you look at exorcisms, deliverances, spiritual healings, because here again, it's all the same thing where something's being exorcised from an individual. I don't even know anymore. I couldn't even honestly tell you how many things that I've been involved with over the course of years.
But you're John Zaffis. So John Zaffis has experienced hundreds of exorcisms. But, you know, Joe the ghost hunter from Akron, Ohio, or whatever, that is not something that they would normally be dealing with in their paranormal on the weekends ghost hunting world. And
mm-hmm.
That's why it saddens me to see these teams that, you know, claim they have an exorcist on their team or their team demonologist, you know, who never went to school for anything and maybe read a book if they're lucky. And I just think that it's almost flippant, the attitude that the paranormal investigators have. And I don't like to judge other paranormal investigators because I'm certainly not perfect. And I've changed the way I've done things over the years. But I think that if people really knew what it was about, if they could really see the bare bones of things that went on, they wouldn't be so excited to go ghost hunting every weekend. I think
the thing is, and, you know, we already touched on it. So many people think, you know, it's like what they're watching on a TV show.
Yes, exactly.
You know, and they don't realize, you know, that 22-minute episode encompasses an entire week of being involved with this stuff. There's so much that isn't aired in the episodes. and people find it fashionable, and they go out there, and again, they start poking around doing investigations. A lot of people get bored very quick with doing paranormal investigating. I see today more than ever before.
That is exactly what you said. It's that
hours
time.
Hours of boredom mixed in with moments of sheer terror. It's like being a police officer. My husband is a police officer. And
or a soldier.
He describes his work the same way. Yep. Hours of just monotonous boredom intermixed with moments of sheer terror.
Yes. And that's here again. Boy, that's a good analogy. I never thought about that. A police officer or a fireman. Wow. That's a good comparison. It really is. And
I think people get the wrong idea from the shows because they see it all so compressed and
exactly.
So well edited, you know.
Yeah.
Amazing how that happened in that time frame. How could that have happened? It happens every time. Where in the real world, it can be, you know, like you said, it can be an entire week. I mean, at minimum, from the people I've talked to, at minimum, it's 2-3 days always, you know, of investigating. And that often does not include the research that went in that preclude, you know, before. And so I think that people just really don't get that nuts and bolts feeling of time and how much time it takes. And their mind wanders and they go, oh, is that all there is to it? And I think they're also looking for guarantees, you
mm-hmm.
know? It's like,
well, again, too, that's something I've noticed, especially over the past, you know, 5-6 years, you know, people will call you up to do an investigation, and they want you to come in and fix it for them. And we can't do that. We can come in. We can give you all the information. We can give you the tools to be able to move forward. But, again, a person has to take control of their life, their environment, their home, to be able to get things to work, to be able to break things that are happening. You can't rely on somebody else to, you know, fix your life for you. It just doesn't happen.
Isn't that even really the essence of a successful conclusion? Not even necessarily that everything, all the activity has stopped or whatever, but that the person or people who are there have taken positive control. Isn't that really kind of your best result? Because if they have control, if they take control, if they are active, if they are proactive, then they don't feel like victims and they don't feel like things are being done to them. They can kind of meet it head on and come to terms with it in that regard. It seems to me like.
Yes and no.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'm happy to be wrong.
You know, I can usually, you know, when you're dealing with somebody and you're having a conversation with them, I mean, psychologically 101 here, you know, most of us know if a person wants to use the paranormal as a crutch, this person feels they got the next Amityville horror. I mean, people view things so differently, and it takes you time to try to comprehend what an individual is looking for. You know, they want to have the next, the biggest case that's ever hit as far as a haunting, or you can deal with your average individual that really doesn't want anything to do with these things. You usually can rule that out just from talking and getting involved with a person and trying to figure out what they want to do. But then again, on the flip side of that, I've been wrong. I've seen people do a 360 and decide they wanted to do something totally different. So, again, to me, the bottom, at the end of the day, when I look back at it, if you're able to, you know, help a person in any way, shape, or form to get their lives to move forward in any way that could possibly be done, then you have achieved something. And if that even means getting a client kicked off at you, all right, fine. I don't even have a problem with that. They want to get mad at what I'm suggesting or get angry that, you know, I'm telling them something they need to do. That's okay, because you know what? I did my job. I did what I had to do to try to help somebody. Whether they choose to do it or not, that's up to them.
Well, that makes perfect sense. I guess the elephant that is in the room, I can barely move. The elephant's in my room. I have to ask, do you have a set of guidelines so that you know when a case does involve, or at least is likely to involve, a demon versus simply a haunting? Do you have specific guidelines, or is it more of a feel kind of thing that you have gained through experience?
It's really both. I mean, you're looking for your obvious telltale signs, you know, of the type of activity that's occurring. You need to know if the people got involved with practicing anything that could have opened up doors. I mean, there's a lot of things that I take a look at when trying to evaluate and make a decision, you know, in the pre-investigation stages. Okay, is it a possibility we could be dealing with something on a negative level? Sure. I mean, you know, I've gone into cases where I thought, okay, we're dealing with human spirit here, and I'd go to investigate and find out we're not dealing with it at all. We're dealing with something that's on a negative level, and vice versa. Because, you know, with us people, all people, we can't see something, we can't touch it, it scares the hell out of us. So therefore, a person can have very light activity occurring in their home, and to them, it's the end of the world, because they can't get a grasp on it. So again, I look at it from both angles of this. You know, I have my criteria that I look for, but then again, I still have to keep that open mind when going in or getting involved. Is this a situation that could be positive or negative?
Okay. So you go into it open-minded, and you look for certain telltale signs and take it from there. It sounds like to me, just from what I've gathered thus far, if it does get close to or appear to be something that is on the dark side, or the demon side, for lack of a better word, that for you personally now, I'm asking, I guess, that it does have a religious component. Is it possible to approach the demonic side of things without it having a religious component?
Wow, is that a loaded question? It's going to depend. Okay, with demonology, what that is, it's the study of dealing with what we call several different things out there. We deal with demons. We deal with what we call the jinn. We deal with deities. So there's different perspectives that I have to take a look at to see what we could possibly be dealing with, because I will have to handle that differently. So again, it doesn't always 100% go by a person's religious belief. If a person's practiced a certain type of ritual or done something, could they have brought something in, you know, of those different types of categories? Yes. Now, it's a lot of times once that decision is made that, okay, I find out that you're basically dealing with a demon in your house, naturally I'm going to consult, you know, a priest or a minister. Okay, because the bottom line today with a lot of people, you know, all religions are deteriorating, each and every one of them. There isn't one out there that, you know, people don't question, or they're looking at things from more of a spiritual perspective than they do from an organized perspective. So therefore, a lot of times when dealing with this, you know, you have to take that into consideration. We're dealing with 2013 here. We're not dealing with 1880 where, you know, everybody went to church or, you know, synagogue, and everybody went right on time and they stayed there all day praying and everything. People just don't do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So the world is different. And from the perspective of investigating as a demonologist, my focal point is trying to figure out what we're dealing with and how I'm going to be able to do it. And I'm not very judgmental when it comes into some of those things. So I try to keep that focal point on what I need to do to be able to help an individual out, no matter what the course of the belief system is going to be or what the corrective action might be that needs to be taken.
Wow. Well, what that indicates is just how broad and how both deep and wide your knowledge has to be, and how open-minded you have to be.
It's something I had to learn. Now, 20 years ago, you know, lights were going on and off, doors were open and closing. I was screaming demon too. But, you know, you have to look, you have to evolve, you have to grow with the understanding. And, you know, I have to say over the past several years within the paranormal community, I think we've achieved a lot. A lot of information has been brought out more into the forefront with knowledge base and different things being shared. You know, I'm a very firm believer in the fact that if you stop accepting the fact of new knowledge, then you're not going to grow and you're not going to have that information to be able to evolve and be able to figure out some of the different things that are out there, because it is a whacked out world in the paranormal. It's whacked.
Well, you have to be brave. Do you consider yourself a brave man?
Oh, hell no. No. Again, I've come to terms with a lot of things. I would say I accept a lot more. I still, you know, things when things occur or things happen, I still jump, I still get nervous. But today I say, I would stand there more right after something happens and I'll go, how did that happen? Why did that happen? What caused it? That's the way I view it today in comparison to before where, you know, I would just stand there and shake in my boots. You know,
you become more analytical about it.
You know, I would say, you know, I'm more at that point now. I know there's so much out there that we just don't even understand. I know that. And the whole point of it is, how do different things occur? I mean, gosh, years ago when we used to talk about poltergeist cases, my gosh, the first thing everybody would scream was demon, demon, demon. Now we have a better understanding, you know, from the perspective that people can harness energy, they can break things, they can move things, and guess what? It has nothing to do with a demon.
And they may not even be aware of it, right?
Most of them are. Most people are aware when they can tap into energy to break things or move things. That's something else that I've learned over the course of time. Again, but it does not mean that you always necessarily have that demonic that is actually causing the whole situation. So, again, that's something that I look at totally differently today than I did 10 years ago.
It seems to me, just from, again, kind of looking at it from the outside, I'm not totally on the outside anymore, and I've learned an awful lot over the last couple of years, especially the last year since we've been working on the project, the America's Most Haunted Project, from the radio standpoint, from the social media, and now we're actively working on the book. And so, you know, I've learned quite a bit. But it seems to me that if you do approach the paranormal, broadly speaking, in the broadest sense, from a purely secular standpoint, that you're really losing out potentially on key elements of the arsenal on the one hand, and then also it seems to me it could be very dangerous if you completely reject any possible religious implications of a given case. And so far, we usually get around to talking to people about their worldview. How do you, you know, whoever you may be, personally view all this? And how does this all kind of fit together for you? And I would say, so far, I think about maybe two-thirds, I'm guessing, have at least some religious component to their worldview. But I would say fully a third are, you know, pretty adamantly non-religious. And I'm just wondering what you think about what the implications are for them in how they go about doing the job.
Let's take paranormal investigators that get involved with hauntings and things like that, and they come into this and they have absolutely no belief system whatsoever. Now, my philosophy is I don't care if you're going to worship a 5-pound quartz crystal rock. As long as it's on a positive, then you've got something to be able to work with there. Okay? But
sure.
It's when I've seen these people evolve and they get involved and they're trying to comprehend it and they're trying to understand the field, people will start to question. And that's the most key element any of us could possibly have. Is there a possibility that there is this realm or a different layer that this energy could be coming through? Is there a hell? Is there a heaven? What is going on out there? When people start to question things like that, I think it makes them take a step back and look at the reality of it. And at the end of the day, you realize that there's things out there we just don't understand. There's things that we don't know. I think, you know, many times when talking and getting involved with different people, because I love sitting down talking to people that have been in the field for years and years and years. Even to this day, I enjoy doing that. I respect those types of people because the knowledge, the base that these people have, you can't get out of a book. You just can't. And listening to their philosophies and the way they view things and the way they look at things, I've learned to comprehend that and understand how they got to that level, where they're at with the way they're thinking. And I think when I see paranormal people today doing that and throwing some of the questions out that I have, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago, that's a healthy way to look at things, to question things, to look at things, examine things. That's how we're going to achieve even more within the paranormal realm, is doing that. Because I'm the last person in the world that's going to stand there and start screaming and yelling, yeah, I'm Roman Catholic and I don't like anybody else out there. That's a bunch of crap. Most religions that I've delved into in my lifetime so far, I am so intrigued. I'm so fascinated by some of the different things that are out there and, you know, some of the things that people do. I'm very intrigued by it because the positive of that is what reinforces the individuals with their belief systems and their cultures. So I dive right into different things like that because I'm very curious. I'm very interested in so many different ways and religions and cultures that are out there. And I'm just, to this day, even 40 years later, I'm still fascinated by it.
Me too. I in college, I was heading off in one direction. I'd kind of felt somewhat obligated, I suppose, following in my father's footsteps toward law. So I was a poli-sci major. And fortunately, I went to a very broad liberal arts school where you were forced to take all different kinds of classes. You just really didn't have any choice, at least to get your feet wet. And that's how I was exposed to both philosophy and religion classes. And I thought my own religion, I grew up Lutheran, was interesting. And I was, always been relatively religious. I've waxed and waned, I suppose, like many people do, in terms of actual participation. But my core beliefs haven't really changed. And but in learning about other religions, just like you're saying, I found it fascinating. The worldview that had to go into creating that, whether it be Taoism or a Buddhism or Hindu, just whatever the case may be. And I came away with so much respect for basically, you know, all the main religions of the world, because they all have something to offer and they all have something to teach and they all have a really interesting way that their mind works, and we can learn from that. And I don't even think you have to be a relativist in order to appreciate that. You can still fundamentally feel deep down that your perspective, your worldview is at least best for you personally, but I think, you know, you can still really have an appreciation for the way these other religions work and the way that the people's minds work, you know, who place themselves into that. And the simple fact that you're able to do that, not just on a theoretical level, but on a practical level, is you know, very admirable and amazing. And I can't imagine there are very many people who are able to function on the level that you do. Hey, I can't even believe it. We've already talked 50 minutes. It has gone so fast. And we haven't even talked about the museum. We at least have to touch upon the museum, you know, for which you are renowned.
Yeah, that's one of the categories of my life. You know, with the museum, it's not in the basement of the house. It's in a barn behind the house. The show, the way that it looks, I go down the stairs and people think I'm going into the basement. No. But it all started, you know, 40 years ago when I got involved with things. And one of my first investigations, a woman had called and was claiming she had these little collectibles. And she picked this one up and it was moving around in the house and she just wanted it out. That's what started me thinking about the whole perspective of it. We have haunted houses, haunted land, haunted people. Well, gee, why isn't, you know, people talking about haunted items? And, you know, then I started researching and realized the amount of books and documentation that were out there on haunted items, and people just never really talked about it all that much. So when it came up, you know, for the opportunity to do the show, I said, gee, that's a perfect opportunity for me to get it out there so people could, you know, comprehend and understand that these affect us just like anything else does. And it's something that, you know, I've been doing, you know, throughout my entire career of being involved with the paranormal.
So how long have you actually – can people actually attend – I mean, can they visit the place, or is it – I mean, the way that your site looks, it looks – at least implies that people can actually come and visit it. But I don't know. That seems like that might be dangerous.
Well, it can – okay, it can be dangerous. Again, people coming in and out, you do got to be careful. You don't want nobody touching the things or, you know, moving the things and – You do got to be very guarded and very careful. But when I originally put the barn up several years ago, I never had any inclination that I would end up doing a TV series behind
it. Right.
So, you know, today the popularity with people wanting to come here, you know, continuously, I'm always getting requests and everything, but it's in a residential area. It's a private museum. I have been looking over the past year or so for a piece of property or a building that I might consider relocating it to so people can come see some of the items I've collected over the years. I don't know if it's going to happen or not because it's a very costly adventure. So, you know, but it's something that I have been looking into. Like I said, when I put the barn up, I never anticipated anything to what is happening today with the museum.
Do you have any weird things going on with all those haunted items being all in one place? Or, I mean, I can imagine all this activity in these places that the items originate from, and then you bring them back to another place. What is your process to make sure that now you don't have just one really extremely haunted barn?
That's something I strive so hard to get into the show, and I'm hoping sooner or later I can get it in there, but... there's bindings, there's prayers, a lot of clergy I work with, I have them do things over it. putting the glass dome over the items isn't binding anything there. It's just covering it so people won't touch them once the things already have been done to them. So, you know, there is a lot. Now, is there activity? Many tell me there is. People get EVPs down there. People have had different things. I've walked down there a couple of times. I've seen a few things move. But here again, I don't know. Did production move it? Did somebody else move it? You know, so I'm very lackadaisy, and I don't pay attention to much. Because today, the barn would have to levitate and spin around before I'm even going to, you know, react to it. You know, I don't. I tune so much out.
You could sell tickets to that, John.
Huh?
You could sell tickets to that.
I'll tell you one thing. If it does happen, there better be a camcorder going. But, you know, again, I don't pay attention to much. But, you know, like I said, so many people come in and out, and they'll start telling me about some of the different items that are down there, and they're very accurate. People have gotten EVPs down there. Again, I don't per se experience too much down there. And the running joke with everybody is, yeah, because they're all afraid of you, they won't do anything when you're around.
The haunted hoarder. Is there ever been an item that you've refused to take?
Absolutely. Again, my process with this, when we're doing things, if an item has that tremendous amount of negative energy attached to it, there have been circumstances where I've buried an item or I've thrown it into a body of water. Again, with certain things, it's not really worth the amount of aggravation I would have to go through to try and get it back to the barn. Mm-hmm. So it's a process depending on what the circumstances are, how far away I am from home. There's a lot I take into consideration when dealing with some of that.
I should add, there's a good Q&A with a lot of these questions specific to the museum on the Haunted Collector site, on the Sci-Fi Haunted Collector site. There's a nice interview with you there in print that I notice addresses specifically a lot of those questions. Very interesting, though, that you're considering, you know, moving it to a more accessible, potentially, location. And I would imagine at that point having it be more of a public thing. My thought would be, gosh, I think you would really draw people really well. I think it would be something you'd be fascinated in.
I don't know. You know, again, like I said, I view things so much differently than probably the rest of the world. I don't know. But, again, it just has to be a certain type of location. I just want it so that, you know, I can get things set up and things have to be behind plexiglass. Things have to be roped off. I don't want people touching things.
Right.
I don't want anybody picking anything up. So, I'm kind of strange when it comes into some of this. And, you know, like I said, it would be a big undertaking.
Sure.
Looking around at different buildings and things that I've been doing over the past course of the year, it would be a monumental expense to do something like that. So, you know, I'm still tossing everything around in my mind what I would like to do and, you know, see happen. I'd love to see the museum established, you know, and it'll be able to carry on, you know, long after I'm gone because, again, you know, you look at the big picture at the end of the day, you know, I do think about that, you know, what the heck's going to happen? Because I know my wife won't even come out here as it is, so.
But, yeah, I noticed she's rather pointedly removed. She's not involved in the process. You have the kids and you have your team, but I was just even you putting together, you know, pictures for the show and that kind of thing. I noticed she was generally, you know, not a part of the scene.
Well, she was in the first season. She was going to be a part of it. She was going to be a part of the TV show.
Oh.
And once she realized what it in detail and everything, she went, "You can forget that, pal." And that was the end of that.
Yeah, just last thought on the museum. I would imagine there would be some very interesting insurance issues as well.
Yes. Again, those are all things, you know, that have come up. And it like I said, it's mind-boggling because, you know, your insurances, your utilities, yeah. your rent, all these things that I went, my gosh, it's like supporting another house.
Oh, sure.
So, yeah. More so, than I mean, all those things definitely have to be taken into consideration. And, you know, my insurance agent, he just laughs all the time. He goes, oh, gosh, what are you trying to insure now, John?
I can imagine, you know. He'd have to be a specialist himself in the field. Oh, well, gosh, obviously this went so fast, and we could just go on and on and on, and we would love to have you back on. But I'm so happy that the show has done as well as it has, and I think the view that it shows of paranormal investigations is unique to you, and I think certainly the paranormal media would be much the worse without the show. So I'm really glad that it has done this well and that you guys are already into your third season. I'm really enjoying that. And, gosh, I have nothing but, on a personal level, just nothing but respect for you. And I've enjoyed talking with you very, very much, and I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that. And thanks so much for having me on. And, yes, let's get something set up again for the future. I'd love to do it again.
Yeah,
cool.
No, I haven't even touched the surface. I have, because I've acquired over the years, if I ever had a chance to talk to you, all these questions I would ask you, and I'd love to speak with you again. But thank you so much for being our guest. It's been a pleasure. Brian is one of my favorite people in the paranormal, and we're just huge fans of the show, and we wish you all the luck. And a little birdie told me that you might even have a case somewhere out in our area this season, so we will be watching for that. And,
well, tell me where you are, and I'll confirm it for you.
We are in Ohio. We are in northeast
Cleveland
Ohio,
area.
The Cleveland area.
Well, your little birdie is correct.
Excellent.
Yeah. So it's a great place. It's a great area. We've got some wonderful places. Talk about haunted items. I've got a 6,000-year-old, now I don't have it, but I know of a 6,000-year-old storyteller whale carved from ivory that sits in a haunted museum along with a Kachina doll that likes to move. There's some interesting things for you.
Wow.
It's the oldest haunted item I've ever seen, and I've seen this thing move. It's kind of creepy, but it's I was thinking about you the whole time. Well,
cool.
Thank you so much for being on the show, and we'll have you back soon. And everybody watch Haunted Collector coming on Wednesday nights on Sci-Fi, right, Wednesdays?
Yep,
yeah,
Wednesday's
now. Tomorrow night's episode will be fantastic. It's about an old prison and an old brothel. And the running joke with me right now is, what would those two have in common? And I'll leave it on that note.
All right. Thanks so much, John. Have a great
guys.
Week. Thanks for listening, everybody. And we will talk to you very, very soon. Good night.
Good night. Bye-bye.